This program is a production of Restoring the Core, an initiative designed to assist those wishing to go deeper into classic Christianity, with resources available in a connected age, online at restoringthecore.com. This is Finding Hidden Treasure, episode number 54. Today, we will be discussing a cemetery in London named Bunhill Fields. Welcome to Finding Hidden Treasure, an ongoing discussion of resources available for those looking to go deeper into classic Christianity. In the New Testament letter to the Hebrews, the writer makes a reference to Abel, the account of whose murder by his brother Cain is recorded in the fourth chapter of the book of Genesis. The writer makes an interesting observation about Abel, that through faith, though he is dead, he still speaks. See Hebrews chapter 11, verse 4. Those who have gone before us, both the godly and the ungodly, continue to teach us. I saw a bumper sticker many years ago which made the point about how all sorts of people teach us, perhaps even in ways without knowing it. The bumper sticker read, "No one's life is a waste. They can always serve as a bad example." Those godly ones who have died also teach us to this day. Many left behind writings, artwork, or some other artifacts which can instruct us as to how they met the challenge of living a godly life with all of its circumstances in the generation in which God placed them. For some who have departed during our lifetimes, the words and actions of those saints of the Lord still teach us through our memory of the testimony of a life well lived. I think that what happens with what is done with our bodies after we die allows us one final lesson for those who remain here on earth. Many have their bodies cremated, often with specific instructions about what to do with the ashes afterward. Those instructions reflect some aspect of what was important to them while they were living here on earth. They serve as a lesson for those left behind. Others will choose to be buried. In the very circumstances of having been buried, a lesson is also taught. Today we will be discussing a cemetery in modern-day London known as Bunhill Fields and the significance of having been buried there had for an intrepid group of 17th century British ministers known as nonconformists. You really can learn a lot walking through a cemetery. The term cemetery carries a bit of theology behind it. It comes to us today from Middle English, then Latin, and then back to the Greek. The Greek word koimeterion means a sleeping place. I've heard others refer to this as the equivalent of the word dormitory. Christians from early in church history would often refer to the place of their burial as the place of their resurrection. In their thinking, a cemetery was not merely a burial ground used to dispose of human corpses and remove them from sight. The hope of those Christians then, as today, is that a cemetery will be, to use a more modern phrase, a launch pad when the resurrection of the dead happens at Christ's return at some point in the future. If you want to read more about this, go to the 15th chapter of St. Paul's letter to the church in Corinth to see how Paul discusses the nature and timing of the resurrection of the dead. The cemetery we will be discussing in this episode has an interesting history in its own right. Bunhill Fields served as a burial ground for over 1,000 years, going back to the Saxon era. The name is thought to be a contraction of Bonehill Fields, an apt name for a site that would hold the bones of an estimated 123,000 known burials before its closure as a cemetery in the mid-1850s. The name Bonehill took on quite a literal meaning in the year 1549. In that year, more than 1,000 cartloads of human bones from the charnel house in St. Paul's churchyard were dumped on Bunhill Fields. Prior to 1549, there was a practice very similar to that of the area around the city of Jerusalem in the 1st century AD. Before 1549, Londoners who died were buried at St. Paul's churchyard. However, that would not be their final resting place. The bodies would be there long enough for the flesh to decay. After this, the bones were dug up and placed in the charnel house to await the resurrection of the dead. By the beginnings of the Protestant Reformation in England, this practice was seen as a popish or a Catholic practice and eventually replaced with permanent interment. In 1549, the charnel house was demolished and several centuries' worth of human bones were dumped in Bunhill Fields, creating a rather large hill. What happened to those bones remains a mystery to this day. In 1665, Bunhill Fields was set apart as a common cemetery. The cemetery was in active use until 1855, when the last of the available burial plots was filled. The City of London took over the area in 1867 for use as a green space in an otherwise building-filled area. Over 70 years later, the graveyard was damaged by German bombing during World War II, but reconstructed in 1960. Currently, about half of Bunhill Fields is a park, and the rest remains a fence-enclosed cemetery. You may recall that I mentioned earlier that you can learn a lot walking through a cemetery. In many old cemeteries in England, and even here in the United States, you will find that cemeteries were attached, quite literally, to a church. Those who would walk up to a church on a Sunday for service were reminded as they saw the church building and the cemetery that they were approaching a community of faith. There were those believers who were still physically alive and active who would gather inside the church building, while those believers who had physically died and still considered a part of the faith community were gathered outside the church and the cemetery. It is a very logical extension of the doctrine of the communion or the fellowship of the saints, in which Christians understand that we have a vital connection to believers around the world and in all generations because we are all united in Christ. However, Bunhill Fields Cemetery was not a parish cemetery. There was no church attached to it. That is why it played such an important role in English church history in the late 1600s. The decade of the 1660s was rather turbulent for those who lived in and around the city of London. The bubonic plague broke out very late in 1664 and throughout the next year. The number of deaths which resulted forced the need to place many of the bodies somewhere else. As a result, Bunhill Fields was acquired as a common and unconsecrated cemetery, that is, unconsecrated by the blessing of priests and curates in the Church of England. In the following year, the Great Fire of London broke out, which, over a three-day period, destroyed about half the buildings in the old walled city. These were also turbulent times for the church as well. In 1662, Parliament passed the Act of Uniformity. I've made mention of this act in the episodes on John Owen, Thomas Manton, and Thomas Watson. Because this act required ministers to swear allegiance to the Book of Common Prayer, several thousand ministers who, because of conscience, could not agree with the Book of Common Prayer were effectively removed from their pulpits in what became known as the Great Ejection. The Conventicle Act of 1664 restricted to five or less the number of people who could gather for non-Church of England religious gatherings. The 5 Mile Act, also known as the Nonconformist Act, passed in 1665, was a further means of restraining nonconformist preaching. Its purpose was to forbid non-Anglican church clergymen from living within 5 miles of an incorporated town or of a parish from which they had been previously ejected. The legal penalty would be lifted if they swore an oath to never resist the king or try to change the government of the church or the state. This would require swearing an oath to obey the 1662 Book of Common Prayer. The intent of these laws was to persecute nonconformists by trying to restrict their ability to preach or reassemble a congregation. It is particularly ironic that the 5 Mile Act was passed in 1665. The act tried to impede the nonconformist preachers, yet they were the ones who stayed in London to minister to plague victims, while other clergy left the city. While the restrictions did ease in the coming years, the nonconformist preachers had to ask themselves if they would obey God or obey the laws of the land, since, with these laws passed against them, they believed that they could not, in good conscience, do both. One such minister was John Bunyan. After the Bible, Bunyan's symbolic story, or allegory of the Christian life, Pilgrim's Progress, is the best-selling devotional work in English. Bunyan spent a total of 12 years in jail for unlicensed preaching. He would have been permanently released from custody if he had promised to not preach again. Bunyan was emphatic that this was something that he could not and would not do. As many of these nonconformists died, their surviving family and friends knew that as they were disconnected from the life and practice of the Church of England, burial of a nonconformist minister would not happen in the Anglican parish cemeteries. As a result, Bunhill Fields was used for their burials. The tomb of John Bunyan is located at Bunhill Fields. the bodies of John Owen and Thomas Goodwin, thought to be among the most skilled of the nonconformist theologians, are also interred at Bunhill Fields. The body of Isaac Watts, who wrote the lyrics to the Christmas carol Joy to the World, is numbered among those at Bunhill Fields. By their lives and by where their bodies were laid to rest after death, these nonconformists teach us to this day their final lessons about being faithful to God. Several sources I've read have noted that Bunhill Fields was outside the ancient walls of the city of London in the late 1600s. By being cast outside of the cities by law and buried outside the ancient London walls, these ministers conducted themselves to the very end, in a very real sense, outside the camp. The writer of the letter to the Hebrews noted in chapter 13, verses 11 through 14, the following: "For the bodies of those animals whose blood is brought into the holy places by the high priest as a sacrifice for sin are burned outside the camp. So, Jesus also suffered outside the gate in order to sanctify the people through his own blood. Therefore, let us go to him outside the camp and bear the reproach he endured. For here we have no lasting city, but we seek the city that is to come." This should not surprise us. Those nonconformists I have been speaking of did, both physically and spiritually, go to Jesus outside the camp of their time to honor Christ by preaching and teaching his word. These giants of the faith, though dead, still speak to us today. Their lives and their words remind us that as believers, we too need to go to Jesus outside the camp. The city we seek is not one in this world, but the celestial city of which John Bunyan wrote, namely, a new Jerusalem in a new heaven and a new earth. Thank you for listening to this program. We can be contacted at mail@restoringthecore.com. We're on Facebook at www.facebook.com/restoringthecore. You can also follow us on Twitter at @RestoreTheCore. My original blog is still active and can be found at schoolofthesolitaryplace.blogspot.com. Thank you for listening. We hope you will join us next time for Finding Hidden Treasure.